SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, and boy, just in time, Casey, huh? How about that? You like that? Something went on during the break. Yeah, that was pretty funny because the line dropped, and you know, it hadn't occurred to me, Casey, to bring this up with you, but for those that are, you know, obviously with everybody home, including Johnny and Gail. Apparently the internet companies are being forced to dial back the quality of service or the I don't know if it's a band, not a bandwidth. I didn't think I read. It's more the level of quality so that they can offset all of the demand. And it did occur to me, Case, that I wondered if it would affect us, you know, from the transmission side of things. Able to sneak right back, and if I hadn't said anything, nobody would have known. Johnny D, though, standing by. And Johnny, good morning.
Stevie, how the heck are you feeling?
I am much better. Saturday, I could tell right away on Saturday that I woke up and I felt better, and most importantly, I could basically manufacture like saliva. That had been the thing that I had noticed that, you know, was a problem. So it literally was 12 days, and I'd say I'm 90. You know, 5%. I got some appetite back, and ate pretty normally over the weekend. You know, I no headache left at all. And you know, I'm a little winded. You know, up and down stairs, and that's the one. You know, the one residual thing, you probably can hear it. My voice is not as, I'm not in full voice, but I knock on wood, I'm okay. And Tina, who had been seemingly recovered, she actually has had, you know, something that has been kind of an indication of having been very run down. And so she's trying to rest and recoup. So this is, you know, those of us that have had just minor, you know, minor symptoms and the most simple reactions to this are feel very fortunate when we look, Johnny, at the people that are stricken. It is just as frightening a situation as any of us have encountered.
A little bit more than a flu-y thing. as you described it earlier.
Yes.
As you described it 2 weeks ago, a flu-y thing.
A flu-y thing, and Johnny said, yeah, and it's in your brain, you idiot.
Yeah, this is... Yeah, certainly. I'm glad to hear that you're doing better, and that Tina seems to be, even though a bit of a relapse, seems to be doing okay. You're right. It's terrifying. Not just for us, because we think we're invincible. And so many of us, we think we're invincible. But for some who think they're invincible, they find out they're not so invincible. And some of those that we love and know are not making it. This thing is extremely serious, and I don't know what else needs to be done to let people know how serious it is. I mean, it's just, and the things that we're doing now are going to help. They're going to work. This thing is going to slow down because we're not spreading it, and it's going to buy us time till they figure out a way of combating it medically. So, you know, it's not so much what you do, because, not meaning you personally, it's not so much what one does, because one believes that they are healthy and young and vigorous and nothing's going to hurt you. It's what other people, how it affects them. And that's what we have to keep in mind. That's it for the coronavirus. We'll move on.
Fair enough. The weekend itself, and after some touch-and-go concerns during the week about getting that Saturday card in, not only did the Saturday card come off, you know, well, Sunday morning dawned and went right on with it. And I think that surprised some people.
Yeah, I was mildly surprised. Although the fact that they continued to take entries was a good sign.
Yes.
And that they didn't kind of say, okay, Saturday's it. I'd say I'm mildly surprised. But on the other hand, when you lay out, you know, people say, well, how can racing keep going? Well, when you lay out the way it works, and that these horses need to keep training and they need to be, you know, taken care of by the same people who are going to do it any way you look at it. And when you lay in the precautions that are taken, well, is it essential? It's essential to the horses that they get out and exercise, and it's essential that they're taken care of by people. Is it essential that they're racing? Well, you can argue both ways, because who's paying for these horses to be taken care of? Well, the owners, they need purse money. But then you could say, well, a lot of businesses are being affected, shut down. Almost every business is feeling the pinch of this. You know, why should racing continue? Well, because we don't have people that come to work there. Our people are already there. They live there. We can keep a watch on anyone who has to come in to contribute to racing. So, on one hand, yes, I'm shocked that racing's continuing. On the other hand, once you kind of lay it out, yeah, you know, you can see how it works. Apparently, in California, not everyone sees how it works. You know, they shut down Santa Anita, but Golden Gate's still going because it was a local decision. You know, and I know they're appealing it and trying to state the case and make the case. So maybe we'll get Santa Anita back. That's the bright side to look forward to. Maybe we'll keep, you know, we've got Tampa Bay, too, in Florida, continues to go. Doesn't their season end pretty soon, or is it scheduled to end pretty soon?
Well, they've got that thing that they do with the it ends, and then they run a certain day, a couple of days over either June 1 or I don't know. There's that that has to do with the you know, the signal host circumstances. Right. And
usually ends about now, right? I mean,
it might go close to Derby to Derby Day. Oh, I mean, so many tracks have now made Derby Day. You know, they extend things, and I think they were scheduled anyway. But we'll, you know what, we'll reach out to Peter Berube and see what their plans are, because that horse population is going nowhere, and there's way more than horses available between Ocala and Tampa and the training centers and you know, southeastern Florida. There's plenty of horses for Tampa to justify staying open.
Right. That's what I was wondering. Hot Springs, Oaklawn's continuing to run in Hot Springs, and, you know, you picked a great time to extend your, on one hand, you picked a great time to extend the date over previous years, because perhaps now you'll be running and the horses are there and the horsemen are there and they don't have any place else to go. So this is actually turned out to be and they've moved the Arkansas Derby to May 2nd. And I think I heard this morning on your show that which I didn't really know. I kind of figured, but I didn't really know that they've moved the Fantasy to, someone said that. Was it Kenny McPeak that said that? That they've moved the Fantasy to May 2nd, too.
Yes.
So that's kind of a good stroke, if that's the case, that Oaklawn will continue to run. And the tough times, obviously, especially in New York, where there's a tremendous horse population and people who rely on racing. You know, everyone's hurting. Almost all industries are hurting right now. And workers, people that do their normal jobs are hurting right now. It's going to be a long time before things normalize. And so racing's not unique. New York racing's not unique in that respect. But, it's tough for them because they're not running. These other places were able to continue to run, and they've got the horse population. And, you know, everyone didn't ship to Keeneland, didn't make that. I mean, I'm sure some people did and were planning on running there, but there wasn't that mass influx. That hadn't happened. So that was kind of good because a lot of people stayed where they were. The ones who were in Florida, at least good for them, they didn't ship to Kentucky. The New York guys were stuck no matter where they go. It's certainly none of us has experienced this before. None of us were alive for a Spanish flu season. And the comparisons are legitimate. We certainly know more now, and our communication is, for better or for worse, is much better now. We can get the word out to people much quicker through television, internet, social media, whatever. And I think we are more spread out now than we were in, 1918?
Yes.
Yeah. I think we're more spread out. We're not in that localized. Of course, when you look at a place like New York, Manhattan, well, yeah, everyone's been together, subways and transportation and so forth. But that helps too, that we're more spread out. We have suburbs, we have, you know, and even though we may have been slow to react as a country, we're seeing this play out around the world right now. It's really, if you survive, you'll have a great story to tell the grandkids.
That's one way to look at it. Johnny, let's talk about Saturday and the way it unfolded. I was hard pressed not to make some of the overview of Saturday about some very unusual jockey decisions and what you know, I don't think there was a player who bet on Saturday who at one point or another, you know, just didn't throw something at the TV and say, what are you doing out there? It was a very unusual day. Almost everybody had a chance to not distinguish themselves.
It reminded me of a day at Hollywood Park. There was a public handicapper who sat in the front row there at Hollywood Park, who published his selections in the newspaper, in the daily newspaper there. And during the Hollywood Park, there was a day during the Hollywood Park season where he just threw up his hands in exasperation and said, "These horses are not running to my figures." which kind of, you know, Saturday we're like, well, I thought there was pace in this race, and there's none. I mean, there's none. How could I be so wrong? Yeah, there were some funky situations, and you know, throughout the day, it wasn't just one race, but there were several races that you're really kind of shaking your head. Well, the winners, which is strange because the winners, it just shows you how competitive the races were. Because looking back on it, you can look at each winner and not really raise an eyebrow. I mean, you could see every one, you could say, yeah, I get it. I see how, you know, I see how this horse won. But in some cases, it was the actual, what happened in the race, the actual development of the race that led to that particular horse winning. You mentioned earlier at the start of the pick six, what a strange case that was with Brandon Walsh finishing 1-2. And yes, you know, there was trouble in the race. Zafel, you said 7 out of 10, and maybe even more than that. But yes, there was trouble there. So that's going to happen on the turf racing. That you laugh about all the time and quote, was it Alan Jerkins? Who says, you know, how many times the different horses will win a turf race, and that was kind of the case there. But if you look at the winner, it's not like you would say, how did she win? You know, she was, you know, a grade three winner had run well recently, you know. So what my point is, that while things happened, it wasn't a day where you, except there was one, I think the horse that paid, you know, $100. I think there was Marco Meneses aboard. Who was that? I'm trying to look through here. $100 winner.
Yeah, Meneses with the identifier.
Yeah, that one I had a little trouble digging out, I think. But for the most part, it just shows you. And by the way, I haven't said this. I know you've mentioned it before on the show. What a tremendous card! What an outstanding day of racing. It really kind of was reminiscent of, we've had two recent outstanding days of racing. Santa Anita Handicap card, Santa Anita Handicap Day card was phenomenal. This card, awesome, outstanding, deep, challenging, entertaining, even to the extent that you say, well, you know, the races didn't develop the way we thought they were going to develop. Either jockeys or connections or horses themselves made strange decisions. But it was an entertaining day of racing. And these kinds of days, long ago, decades ago, happened more often. Now times have changed. Things are different. We have to accept that things are different. But if we can crank out days like this, you know, every so often, every month or so. You know, it makes this game a really interesting game. You know, we talked about people coming over to racing from wagering on other sports, other sporting events. And I'd like to hear from someone who's done that, what their impressions are, especially if they were involved Saturday. And I don't know what the answer is going to be. I haven't spoken to anyone who's made that conversion or temporary switch. How do you find our game? You know, what's your reaction to it? Is it too confusing? You know, people say to me, "Oh, it's so confusing. It's so hard." I said, "Look, it's the simplest thing in the world. It's what you did in the schoolyard when you were a little kid. You lined up and you said, whoever gets to that pole first wins." So in that respect, it's very simple. And you knew who the fastest kid in the schoolyard was. And if you were lined up next to him, you knew you couldn't beat him. So he was better than you. And that's basically what we do. And so if you could, you know, put a 20-pound sack on that kid's back, would that bring you closer to beating him or not? You know, so if you bring it back down to its basic level, we're trying to predict who's going to get there first. And some of the kids lined up in the schoolyard are faster than some of the other kids. We know it. You knew who they were. You knew who you could beat and who you couldn't beat, you know. But it was the competition that matters. So if we break the game down to that level and explain it to someone that way, it's not crazy. Now you say, well, when you start to get into the data and all, it's just showing you at points along that schoolyard race where everybody was and how far they were behind the leader. Not that difficult to understand. You put it in that context. Fractional times of the race. Well, if somebody was standing there with a stopwatch and kept putting it off as you guys ran in the schoolyard. That's it. Of course, look, it gets way more complicated when you start to factor in ground loss and surfaces and post positions, you know, but at its basis, the game is not, it's who gets there first. We're all going to line up, and we're going to see who can get there first. And the fastest guy usually wins unless we saddle him with some kind of a handicap. You asked people what was their influence. It's funny because you asked the question like, well, where would you point a newbie? I don't like that word. A person new to following racing. Where would you point them for an explanation of the game? And there are, and some of the guests either misinterpreted the question, I think, a little bit. If that's how you were kind of aiming it, which I think you were, right? If you were aiming it like, where would you tell somebody new to go to learn about the game?
And?
Was that the question you were asking?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I think there are several places. But, you know, Rick Yang's book, Handicapping for Dummies, or I don't know the exact title of it. It's one of the four dummies books.
Handicapping Horse Racing for Dummies.
Yeah. You know, that's a great place to, if you're new and you don't know what to do. Probably if you're new, you're not listening to the show right now, but just in case you are, or you know, or a listener knows someone, that's a really great basic place to start to get an explanation. Now, if you want to go further down the line, personally, for me, Tom Ainsley's
The complete guide. The problem with Ainslie has become that the conditions and the basis, you know, at the time he wrote it. I mean, if he had not passed away and had a chance to really amend it for the way the condition book changed, I guarantee, but at the time, for several generations, it was invaluable because it absolutely was a foundation style. It laid the brickwork for every part, you know, every jumping off point in learning the game's nuances.
So now you're telling me I'm old.
Without a doubt, because there are still plenty of aspects within Ainslie that are germane and valuable. But you know, so much, you know, it's one of the reasons that Davidowitz felt compelled to update Betting Thoroughbreds, because a lot of the things that the conditions, you know, about a horse running back in 7 to 10 days, and you know, those kinds of things had changed. But you know, the essence is almost always still, you know, going to be true in the books that are the absolute standards.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it all the time, just to kind of, as you said, the standards, because I know what's changed and what hasn't changed. I can, you know, read past all that and kind of, but I guess you're right when you say the book is dated. Here's Ainslie's comment on Early Fires. Not yet a fully matured rider. Early has so much. I love it. You know, I love reading this stuff. He has so much will to win that it compensates for some of his mistakes. The mistakes are becoming less numerous in the hard school of Eastern racing. Everyone agrees that the kid will be one of the good ones at all distances for years. Well, he was right. Early Fires was one of the good ones for years, but to read something that says he wasn't fully matured yet, you got to go back a way for that one. But and I enjoy that kind of stuff. You know, you see some of the trainers that he talks about, and the other thing I find interesting, I can't put my finger on it right now, but he talks about winning percentages in this day and age where we are concerned with trainers who bet 30% or close to 30%. And, you know, he talks about certain trainers who, you know, hit at 25%, 20 to 25%. I know the game was different back, and that there's no changing that, but he's talking about Hall of Fame guys who were in an age when, there was less racing, certainly. And the 20 to 25% range was where the top guys were. So to then extend it to almost 30%, running even more horses, it's kind of shows you that sometimes those numbers are a little bit ridiculous, you know. But Ainslie was one, and then, of course, you know, Davidowitz and Beyer. The Brohammer stuff, I heard you mention that you kind of found some of that, like, getting too far. Yeah, I didn't have a mind for that stuff. When the Brohammer stuff was a little bit too much for me to, you know, I didn't want to get into it that deeply. I got the gist of the things that they were saying, but I couldn't really get into, doing that kind of deep work. And I think you kind of shared sentiment with that. I found that interesting.
Johnny, let's get the results in from Showdown too on Saturday, and I understand how people had to kind of adjust. They were probably expecting, you know, literally up till 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock on Friday, they had you know, anticipated that they'd have Gulfstream races and Santa Anita races to use on Saturday for Showdown, but then they had to adjust and they had to quickly fold in opinions at Oaklawn, which you know, might have been a little bit of a wrinkle for some.
Yeah, we at Express Bet, we had plan A, B, and C. Plan A was if Gulfstream and Santa Anita run, you know, we're gonna use those two tracks, races in those two tracks. We had the races picked out, and then if plan B was if Gulfstream canceled, we would use Santa Anita and Oaklawn. And then plan C was if Santa Anita cancels, we'll use Oaklawn and Gulfstream. So we had to go to plan C. Unfortunately, you know, the most important thing I felt going in was let's not post the races until we have an idea of what's going on. Certainly we don't have a complete idea, but let's make sure that what's going to happen is don't post something and then change it, was my thought. Because then you have people doing the work, and they're going to be upset. So we don't want them to waste their time. So we waited as late as possible, excuse me, and then we put up a, you know, a menu we thought would work out well. And, yeah, it was a curveball. It was a curveball. But this is it's a handicapping competition. And further complicating matters was Oaklawn got some rain to send the, you know, off-track handicapper's way. But I think it was a fair challenge. It was a good challenge. The only thing that I was a little bit, I kicked myself because I should have maybe seen it coming. Gulfstream's, the Florida Derby went off, it was scheduled to go off at 6:36. And we know what happens at Gulfstream. So the Oaklawn final race that we used the 10th race at Oaklawn was at 6:41, scheduled for 6:41. We should have, in hindsight, I should have realized that Gulfstream would not go off at 6:36 and would run very close to the Oaklawn race. And so the reason I say that is because there wasn't time for people in the competition to see what had happened in the next to last race. You know, there wasn't time for the results to come through. And then people plan on, you know, going after the leaders. What, you know, as it turns out it was fine because the winner of the last at Oaklawn, excuse me, was the favorite one for a $10 wager, got back $39. So it wasn't a big hit. So anybody trying to lap the leaders in the last race couldn't have done anything. But I just. That's a small thing that I wish, you know, we'd seen earlier and tweaked. But congratulations to Jim Clark, Jason Phillips, and Eric Hoag, a triple dead heat for first, $349.
That was crazy.
It's absolutely crazy. After 10 races at you know, as we talked about, Oaklawn and Gulfstream, not familiar tracks for most of our tournament players. Triple dead heat at 349. They hit 66 each. It's not a bad payday there. Kevin McFarland, who was the star of, I thought, beat the host. He finished, I guess it was fourth, got $3,000. His total was 333. And he led well past the halfway point. And then Robert Haddad, finished fifth with the 325 total to earn $2,000. Interesting that three of the top five players advanced by qualifying in other Express Bet tournaments, beat the host championship and also Express Bet Live. And then two of the players, the second and fourth players, the first, third, and fifth players were qualified. The second and fourth players both bought in, which I found when I saw the name Kevin McFarland buying in, I thought that was weird. Here's a guy who won two weekly prizes, and beat the host.
Right.
And yet didn't qualify in the Beat the Host Championship. So he bought his way in and finished, I guess it was fourth, because it was a three-way tie for first. But I want to congratulate all the winners and thank everyone for supporting a showdown. And, you know, there were some people who, you know, had questions about the selections of races, but what can we do? This was the way we went, and it worked out well for many people. I mean, if you look at the top, roughly the top 40, 50 players made money, even though they didn't, you know, they didn't maybe get a prize, they still made money playing, or they broke even playing showdown, especially if they had qualified. So anyway, that kind of wraps up our early tournament season. Of course, everything is up in the air right now, racing and in life in general. So we'll see where it goes from here. But that closes the books on the showdown. It was a great fun, a great tournament, and the end of our winter-spring handicap tournament season.
Well, train the sights on the summer season and look forward to it. Johnny, a quick note. I've got George Weaver next, but Rainbow Six payout. Looking back, like you said, there wasn't anybody that was in that sequence that was just completely difficult and impossible to have used. I mean, you know, you may have tiptoed some spots, and really did with Mean Mary. You got a horse that, you know, some people could have leaned on heavily and done fine, but it was tough enough, you know, where you had for me, Bemma's Boy was my third choice. Social Paranoia literally was the last horse I dropped, as a first time 4-year old, which is an angle that I like. Tis the Law ended up being the reliable single we were kind of, you know, all hoping for, and Swiss Skies. The one thing I did get right on the day was spreading in the Oaks. You know, kind of sensing that was going to be a spot you needed to go wide, and that it wasn't a simple equation. But $17,000, a very nice payday for those that made their way through.
Yeah, and I think the one that you didn't mention is Zulu Alpha. Because I think that was one that players hung their hats on. I didn't particularly. I thought he was much the best, but for a variety of reasons, I thought maybe something else would happen. But then you got to find the winner, you know, which makes it, you know, you can't use them all. You know, you get to the point where, you know, your third and fourth horses, you say, okay, I'm going to cut the ticket because I don't want to spend that much. You know, you're limited by your budget. And $17,000, I originally thought, man, that seems a little low. But then when I went back and looked, like similar to what you just did, Mean Mary could have hung your hat on Mean Mary. You could have hung your hat on Tis the Law, and you could have hung your hat on Zulu Alpha. I thought those were the three places where people potentially could, you know, could single and move on. And two of those three hit, and one of them didn't. So the 17 makes sense, because the people who picked the correct places to go little, and those that picked them to go big, if you pick the right ones, you hit it. I got a tweet from a from one of the guys who works at the golf course in the bag room. Of course, he's not working now, and he was texting me about the races, and he got caught in the Zulu Alpha. He said if I'd have just leaned on the Marymore, I'd have hit it. And 17,000, you know, to him right now is like air. So, but hey, it just shows you. And but how about it? Come back the next day, and somebody hits it. Oh man, talk about the good news, bad news. A single ticket the next day. Well, the good news is you had a single ticket today. The bad news is if you'd had it yesterday. But anyway.
And I'm just looking because you had two favorites with Tiz and with Mean Mary, and then you had a third choice, a fourth choice, a fifth choice, and a fifth choice. And you know, that the two fifth choices are obviously, I mean, that, you know, although Social Paranoia as a fifth choice, you know, not unreasonable, and when Swiss Skydiver as a fifth choice, so
yeah,
that was the key. Well, Johnny, obviously, we're unsure about Saturday in Santa Anita. We're got feelers out to management about they've called on people to write some respectful emails to the health county health officials, but it from what I could sense yesterday, there is some hope that they get the authorization to run. So we'll see how that plays out. In the meantime, as Johnny said, we thank everybody for playing showdown, and everybody's making the most of what they can, whatever's out there. And today, of course, we're back at Will Rogers Downs and Fonner Park.
Yeah, and if you're bored, or if you're not bored, I woke up yesterday morning and I reached across and patted my wife and I said, "I think I'm going to stay home today."
That's an original thought. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then today, too. There you go.
Yeah. Be well.
Johnny.
Take care. Be well. And take care of each other. It's not just you we're worried about. So be safe.
Johnny D, everybody, XB. And Johnny, for you and Gail, best wishes. We'll catch up later in the week. We'll take a timeout up near the top of the hour. Got visits coming from George Weaver and Brendan Walsh as well, and much more, an hour to come on this Monday. Still recapping, a lot to do yet, and a lot of interesting results. Looking forward to reaching Barkley Tag as well, and talking about not just, obviously, Tis the Law, but the emergent three-year-old was Highland Glory, who, Paco Lopez, another of those, of the good Paco performances, and Cheermeister. I tell you, Cheermeister goes off at 7-1 and absolutely looked like she was going to pull off a third straight win. And it took a terrific job by Paco to nail Cheermeister on the wire. They're the young family. Bonner Young and company, they're about as well liked and respected in the game, and they've been with Barkley forever, they continue to produce. Christy with a K, the Peshamville daughter that had already churned out Highland Sky, and now here comes Highland Glory in behind. So very happy for the Youngs. We'll take a break. Hour three coming up, and George Weaver joins us. Vekoma, you know, I think people were, you know, more focused on what was coming on Saturday, but Vekoma's comeback was spectacular and bodes very nicely going forward. George has got to be thrilled. And I know Randy Hill is, too. I wrote to Randy, and he's delighted. Barkley Tag will join us later this hour as well. Let's spend the last hour this morning with George Weaver, Brendan Walsh, Barkley Tag.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years old and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and present in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gaming Support Line 800-522-4700.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
Sirius XM Sports presents